Hello, welcome to Mosaics. I'm your host, Holly Beach, with the Idaho Office for Refugees. And today we're here with some members of the Ukrainian Welcome Center to hear about this amazing summer program they were able to put on for kids there and the impact that that had. So I'd love to introduce you to my guest, Tina Polishuk. She is the director of the Ukrainian Welcome Center in Nampa. And Joni Life, she was the coordinator of the summer program. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
So Tina, I'm really glad to have you back. I was just thinking about how you were the first Mosaics guest, the guinea pig, back in May of 2023. So
yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me again.
So for anyone that didn't get to meet you then, can you share a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm the director over at the Ukrainian Welcome Center. I fell in the role kind of by accident. I never imagined that my professional journey would put me in this work, but I always say that God has other plans sometimes, even though we don't always know what they are. But we started the Ukrainian Welcome Center as a volunteer-based organization. When the war started, we started seeing a trickle of Ukrainian families that were coming into the Treasure Valley, and so we corralled a group of different organizations to step up to the call of making sure that they get assimilated here. We envisioned that that would be a six-month project, and 2.5 years later, we're still doing the work. And we are still meeting and welcoming new families every single week. So that's a little bit about me.
Thank you. Joni.
So I'm an educator and retired now, but I was one of those organizations that Tina corralled 2 years ago. We had a school here in the Boise area and accepted the first two little Ukrainian kiddos who settled in this area. And it was through that effort that Tina and I got to know each other. Tina is resourceful and persistent, and it was awesome to see that effort go into finding a place for these kids to be and to be able to learn. So yes, that's how I got involved. But I've been an educator for a long time, and have just enjoyed the journey of watching kids grow.
That's great. As an educator, were you here locally?
So I worked in California and here in Boise area.
That's great. And so you were able to jump in with that background and help create a really meaningful program for kids. How many children participated this summer in the program?
We had 76 is what we counted.
Wow.
So
that's
that was
a lot.
Yeah, there was the 76 that went to the day camp, and then we had 97 people up at the Cascade portion of the camp.
Oh, very cool. And just to give us an idea of how many people the Ukrainian Welcome Center has worked with since you opened, how many people have come seeking services?
So we've had about 730 people come through our doors since the beginning of the conflict.
Okay. And the Treasure Valley is an attractive place because there already is an existing Ukrainian culture and community here. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So the Ukrainian language is actually the third most common spoken language in our area, which a lot of people don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's English, Spanish, and then Ukrainian. So there is quite a large community dating back to the early 90s here in our valley. And that Slavic community, we refer to it as the Slavic community because it's made up of the Eastern European countries that gained their freedom when the Soviet Union fell apart. Mm-hmm. So those are, you know, people from Moldova, Romania, Ukraine, you know, Slovakia, etc.
And your own family, too, has ties. Are you comfortable sharing about
that? Yeah, so my mom is from Ukraine. She's from a little region just southeast of Kiev called Cherkasy. And my dad is from Kyrgyzstan. And so they grew up in the Soviet regime. And as Christians, they were persecuted for their faith. And so before the Soviet regime fell apart, the persecution towards Christians became very, very severe. Because they were the ones that had the testimony against the Soviet government. And so in 1987, they were essentially stripped of all of their rights, and they said, you need to get out. And they left not knowing where they were going. And so they stopped in Italy. They had a baby, which was me. and then when they received permission to come to the United States, they came here. So I was stateless until sixth grade, which was interesting. But then when the war started, you know, our roots do go back to Ukraine. And so it's just an issue that's really near and dear to our hearts. And when we got into the work, we just realized, you know, we can't necessarily affect what is going on overseas, but we can do something about what is here for them in Idaho.
When you first started working with people coming into Idaho, they had just fled war. What were some of the, you know, questions that you, that people had, or outlooks that they had for what life would be like in 6 months or a year?
So I would say at the very beginning, we were seeing people show up with literally a couple of suitcases and maybe a few hundred dollars in your pocket, which is how my family arrived as well. And so at that time, we were really trying to find housing for them. We were trying to make sure that they were connected to different food pantries, local transportation resources, because at that time, we didn't have the infrastructure through our government processes to make sure that they had, you know, just that step up that they need to, you know, find housing and meet some of those basic needs. And then there was also a clog in the system with them getting authorized to work. So that was just, it was really, really hard to overcome, because we were really relying on the goodwill of the people and that alone, which is wonderful. And, you know, people here in Idaho, they answered the call, which is why it continues to stay attractive. So those days were really, really difficult, but we've come a long way. And I know that the Boise Rescue Mission, they helped us a ton at the beginning. They, you know, gave us this great facility where we were able to actually house people, because we weren't sure where they were. You know, we were trying to make sure that people were not sleeping under bridges, that they were not on the streets, that they were somewhere where they are safe and they had shelter. So fast forward now, our services look a little bit different. They're a little bit more sophisticated, but, you know, they continue. The needs continue to be there.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to think where we are, because nobody knew how long, you know, they would need to be in the U.S. So many people, I think, came wanting to get home as soon as possible. And it's just impossible to predict how these things will play out. So I think things like the summer camp you offered are so important, because maybe it's not like that essential need at the very beginning, but it's, I think that mental health and social connection is so important if you're going through something so unpredictable like this. So Joni, how did you see that, you know, with the kid, I came and visited for a day, and obviously kids are running around and they got the big noodles and the big lawn that they're, you know, playing around with, and they're making the coolest art projects. And, but you also got to just be with them through this week after week. What was that like for you?
So I had a great team, first of all, and I don't know that we had very many days with actually 70-something students at the same time, or campers. They were dispersed a little bit better than that. But with that good team, we made sure that each station throughout their day was a hands-on experience. We knew language was going to be a barrier, and learning can happen through modeling and observation and trial and error, and that's what we focused on. So we did have art, some science, some engineering, and then a little bit of a language, taking the primary vocabulary words from the lessons that were going on, and then helping the students build that vocabulary. So through that process, kids were learning to feel successful about learning, being learners in a new country. It's hard enough for kids to change schools, but to change countries and not know the language is just overwhelmingly challenging. And then as the students were grouped to work on a little engineering project, or buddied up to do a collaborative art project, they began to form friendships. Just because they came from Ukraine didn't mean that they were automatically friendly toward each other. You know, there's always that that fear of rejection, I guess, and self-consciousness. So it was very good to see the kids form relationships. And then by the end of the 4 weeks of camp, you know, people had shared phone numbers, and they were taking rides home with other families and doing things outside of camp with their friends. So I see that the purpose of our camp, you know, really was a school readiness focus as far as the grant was concerned. But the enrichment that the kids got through their relationships and their self-confidence, through being able to express, were the big takeaways. Mm.
Building that confidence for the school years to come.
I just like to add one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that they were displaced from their country on the tail end of COVID. So for a lot of these children, they're going on 4 years of not having a normal educational experience. So, you know, you take someone who's walking into one of our fifth grade classrooms. You know, the last time they walked into a school normally on September 1st was when they were in first grade. And so I think that there was that element of like, oh, okay, this is what it means to come into a setting where it's both engaging, it's fun, but it's also, you know, academically supporting what my needs are. And then also, you know, to your point of exchanging phone numbers, I think they also got the sense of, you know, I'm not going through this journey alone. There are other children, there are other families that have been through COVID and displaced in some cases through multiple countries that are just like me. And I can still figure out a way to be engaged in learning and make that something really important for my life.
Wow, that's really cool. Tina, do you think families still feel a sense of limbo about how long they're going to be here? Or do you think for a lot of them, they want to settle here permanently now?
I would say it's mixed. Yeah, there are definitely families that they want to go back. They just have this strong sense of, you know, I am a Ukrainian and I love my country. You know, I'm here just because I have to be safe. The other thing that comes into play is that over the 2.5 years, Ukraine has become an increasingly more dangerous place. Mm-hmm. So I would say that those families that are arriving from, you know, that Eastern Front, I think those families are going through that journey of accepting the fact that their city doesn't stand anymore. Or if it does, it's so ruined that, I mean, really, it's going to be a bulldozer that's going to go through that city, and that includes their homes. So I would say those that came from the East, they're starting to accept that and start internalizing, like, what does this actually mean for their future? Whereas other families that, you know, and all of them really love Ukraine, right? Like, they wish that this wasn't where they had to be, but it is where they are, and they're very grateful for being here and grateful to be connected. So it really is mixed. You know, the part that is hard for a lot of families is that they have family over there. Mm-hmm. They have parents, they have grandparents there. They have loved ones where, you know, maybe they initially wanted to stay, but their region just got so dangerous that now they're, you know, making arrangements to get them over here too, even though they were determined to wait it out. So unfortunately, because of, you know, the status of the war, it's really mixed. And, you know, the longer people are here, sometimes we just see that discouragement growing because the war's not ending and everybody hoped that it would by now. Mm-hmm.
What do you think, this process of getting to get together for these kids, did you see them being able to kind of find the space and the trust to be able to really process some of that, what they were going through?
So we had an amazing art teacher who helped the kids express their feelings through sometimes individual art, but mostly collaborative projects. That process allowed kids to see that somebody else might be expressing, maybe it was that they miss playing soccer, or maybe it was that they are missing family members. And then that next child who would come along to add to the art piece would be able to spin off of those ideas. And they were so respectful of each other. I don't know if you've watched kids do collaborative art, but sometimes it's just, you know, nope, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm starting over. Nobody took that approach. Everybody treasured the idea that was there and then added to it. So we ended up with this giant sunflower, and it was the color wheel. I wish I had a picture to show, but if you can imagine this sunflower that would fill a wall, and then each petal was within a color range, and we had a soccer field that was appliqued, and then a big green spider was put in the middle of that soccer field.
Yay.
You know, daisies and sunflowers for sure. We had lots and lots of sunflowers because that's the national flower of Ukraine. But that's the kind of thing that I think allowed the students to get their maybe emotions explored and expressed.
I do have a picture of that big sunflower. Okay. I'll share it with this when this comes out because it's so cool.
It is so cool.
So I'll add, Joni and her team also did this really cool thing where they put themes in. So, and some of those themes were things like migration, and like we took a field trip to the Oregon Trail Museum in Oregon. And so I think that also was just such a strong message to those kids and the families that, you know, you're not the only people that have ever gone through a journey like this. Mm-hmm. You know, this has happened in the past and people have survived and they've been resilient throughout this process. So just those, all of those themes that you guys put together were really neat and meaningful. I'm curious though, Joni, if you would share that story you shared about the boy who was going on the field trip and talked about the fields.
Oh, there was a, you know, most of the kids were crammed into seats so that, you know, you couldn't have fit a piece of paper between them, and they were playing games and chatting and laughing. And this boy sat alone. He was looking at some messages on his phone and some pictures. And I said, oh, are you communicating with somebody? Or I don't know how our conversation started, but something benign. And the conversation did not stay benign. He said, I'm just looking at these fields and they remind me of home. We were driving kind of out toward Marsing area to go across the river and to the Owyhee County Museum. Mm. So golden fields, and it was just vast, you know, how it is along the Snake River. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him some more questions, and he just was able to express that he's afraid he won't ever get to see that again, but that he was feeling a little bit better because it looks like home here. He was able to find that comfort from just the reminder.
Wow. That's really cool you got to share in that moment with him. Mm-hmm. And that's a painful moment, but also a bit of hope. Mm-hmm. I've heard that from other people, too, that came from Afghanistan, too, how sometimes in the mountains it reminds them of home. And it's really special to be able to find that again. How do you see that, Tina, playing out as people kind of get more settled, maybe?
So what we've found with not only children, but adults as well, is that it takes them time to process and get to a point where they're ready to talk about certain things. And, you know, initially we'll have an intake with a client, and sometimes there's a breaking point. And for every person, it's different. Sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's a year. But when you can have that level of trust with the individual to be like, okay, this is a safe place where you can actually talk about this, and you can, you know, we'll cry together about your journey, you know, we'll support you, we'll make sure that you're connected. So, you know, it does give them a sense of hope that there is life beyond, you know, this, just this huge change. But that processing time, I think, was really powerful in the kids camp particularly. And I'll share a story where I had, we were actually on our way back from Cascade, and there was a couple of kids that drove up with us in our RV. And so after 3 days of being in Cascade, it was just at the very tail end. It was the last 20 minutes. We were already getting into town. And he shared the story about how he personally, with his family, it was a boy, I think he was maybe 8 or 9 years old. And, you know, we were playing Uno. And just out of the blue, he started telling me about his experience of how he and his family, they were just out and about town, you know, visiting different markets. And at that time, he was in a, like in the next door shop, like he was in a shop and then his parents were in a different shop and the missiles started flying over. And so some strange lady grabbed them and they went into a bunker and they were there for several hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that he was able to be like, okay, I'm playing Uno. There's a person that I trust and I'm willing to share this to help my healing journey start. Mm-hmm. And so we can get there. But it does take, you know, experiences like this kids camp to create an environment where they can begin that processing and that healing. Mm.
That's really powerful. I'm curious what you might share with other educators who work with kids that have been displaced in their past. Do you have any thoughts on what you learned from this summer that you would take with you?
Some of these kids are just so studious and they're going to get into their new classrooms and be model students. You know, just like kids anywhere, there are rule followers and they're going to just conform. But there are some kids who maybe were a little more independent or creative thinkers. And through this process of losing home and having to be replaced or here, they are fighting back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that has to be. They have to be able to express their loss and grieve that loss. But that doesn't mean that they are angry about being here. They'll accept this new location. They'll accept their new school. They'll learn. Another big encouragement for teachers here is that they shouldn't be discouraged by the lack of English. Mm. These kids are going to learn English so quickly, and they will be successful students. This year might not be their best school year, but they will get there. So just let them be, let them connect with the learning that is helping bolster their confidence, and it will come. Mm.
Yeah, understanding that maybe someone acting out isn't out of being ornery.
Yeah.
I heard on a podcast the other day that grief is a change you didn't want. And so just, you know, feeling that, and even as a kid trying to navigate that. What's next for Ukrainian Welcome Center? I know you have a holiday Adopt-A-Family event coming up.
Yeah, we are definitely planning for that. And on our website, if there's anyone that does want to adopt a family, our goal right now is to have 15 families adopted for Christmas. We had 10 adopted last year, so we're hoping to meet a new goal for 15 in total. And if anybody is interested in Adopt a Family, it's a very super, super simple concept. You go in and you put in some information about yourself and then indicate how many people you'd be willing to adopt. So it could be, you know, you can do it as a family, you could do it as an organization, maybe your business wants to do it. But if you say, you know, we can take on a family of four, you know, versus we can take on a family of 10. So on average, depending on what you buy, it's usually between $75 and $100 a person. Mm-hmm. And so what we'll do is we'll match the sponsor up with a family and give you a list of their sizes, what their needs are, and then what their wants are. So something they need to get, something that would be nice to have. And then also information about whether it's critical that you meet the family versus there are some families that want to stay anonymous. So we ask those kinds of information. But if you're interested in adopting a family, please, you know, fill out that form on the website. And our goal is to have sponsors identified by the 15th of November. And then by Thanksgiving, we'll have you the family wish list to them.
Go ahead, Jenna.
Can I add to this? In organizing the summer camp, we just were overwhelmed, the team that I worked with and I were overwhelmed with how generous our community is. So I can't imagine that it's going to be hard to get 15 foster families, so to speak. But our community is so giving. And anything we asked for, whether it was lunch for a field trip, and this is lunch for 70-something kids, or whether it was a craft item so that the kids could create, it was there. And I just am very blessed and proud to be part of this community.
That's so cool. One of the previous guests I had on here was sharing how she did the Adopt-A-Family thing with the Ukrainian Welcome Center last year and how much it meant to her. She was sponsoring a family and it just made her whole holiday season. So that's a really cool way. I know Agency for New Americans too has Adopt-A-Program. So if you guys meet your limit, there's more love to go around.
Absolutely. Yep. Happy to share.
Great. Well, I appreciate you both sharing your insights. Anything else you'd like to leave with people today?
Just admire people who join our community and are looking at things through a different lens. I love the title of your podcast and all the different cultures that we bring together truly do make Idaho a special place. So I just think rather than being shy about learning about somebody else's culture, lean in and, and find out what makes that person able to transport across the world and find success here.
Yeah, I would say just I'm super grateful to our community, and I'll say this over and over and again, but we could not have done it without the individuals and the organizations that, you know, all the time are coming forward and saying, hey, I want to help. And I think it's just a testament of who we are as Idahoans. And it really is a privilege to be serving Ukrainians with the community resources that we have here.
Wow. Well, thank you both. It was inspiring to come for that one day and meet the kids, take some pictures. And there was one thing that was unresolved for me, though, because the engineering class, they were making their little protectors for their eggs and they were going to go drop them off something.
The second floor.
I'm like, am I allowed to say what it is? It's like, and I was really excited to see. And they're like, no, we're launching them tomorrow. So I never got to see whose egg survived.
Okay. So the kids, that was a collaborative project again. And the engineering teacher took the little egg contraptions upstairs and threw them out the window. So they were launched high. And about 30 collaborative egg baskets were dropped, and at least 10 survived.
Okay.
They did a great job with parachutes made from newspaper, and it was very fun to see. They were so excited.
That's awesome. So about a third success rate. So not quite ready for NASA. But
no, not quite. But they were given, like, straws and cotton balls and, and newspaper. So,
that is so
they
fun.
Did all right.
All right. That's impressive. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And Tina, can you say your guys' website again if anyone wants to join?
Yes. So it's UkrainianWelcomeCenter.org.
Perfect.
And it's right there on the front page.
And everyone's welcome to email us at mosaics@idahorefugees.org. We'd love to hear from you. If you have ideas for future podcast episodes, please reach out, or questions or feedback. We'd love to hear from you. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.